Tom Selleck as the Gungan.
Mustache.
Good. Good Tom Selleck joke. Just the word mustache.
Well, I was thinking about it in terms of being on a Gungan. Right? I mean, come on. Right?
Gungan with a mustache would be pretty funny.
Yeah.
I'm Zach.
I'm Riff.
And I'm Kevin.
And it's time for, apparently, what I am told is episode number 87 of Video Games Hot Dog.
Yeah.
That doesn't seem possible.
Have we switched to Julian?
Yes.
Julian Lennon?
Yeah, we were doing a Gregorian numbering system, and now we're doing a Julian numbering system.
Okay.
So it's
higher pitched.
So it's Video Games Hot Dog L.
Yeah, what, LXXXVII?
Yeah.
Is that what we're at?
Sure.
Is that it?
Sure.
L is 50?
Yes. Yeah.
And then 80 is seriously LXXX?
Yeah.
That's hot.
Yeah.
too hot for television. Hey, guys, we're back. We're back in the same pod pit.
Yeah. Germ hole.
Yeah. Sorry, Riff.
Kevin and I both have the flu.
Yeah.
Remember a couple years ago when we both got the swine flu?
Jesus Christ, that was awful.
And how you were knocked on your ass for like two weeks? No, I drank it into submission so that I could make out with all the ladies.
Right.
Yeah. I am patient zero.
This is while not like awesome, this is zero. 1,000 times better than that swine flu was. That was awful, awful. I didn't want to ever get out of bed, and now I can like get around.
You're talking. You had one drink.
I had a half a drink. I didn't actually even finish that.
Oh, I would have offered to finish it for you, except gross.
Yeah, no, that would have been... I mean, they get pretty gross if you let them sit for more than 5 minutes anyway.
Yeah.
These margaritas that we get before the show.
They're pretty ultimate.
They are.
Yeah, so I'm trying to drink my influenza into submission.
Yeah, I'm just trying to...
You're trying to sleep it into submission. Yeah. I'm
just holding my breath as long as I can.
Yeah, it's probably for the
best.
Can
you, like, Ted Danson in Creepshow... Hold your breath a long, long time.
I never saw it.
Well, really?
Yeah.
No, it's good. There's a skit with There's a part of that movie is Ted Danson versus Leslie Nielsen in a trying to drown each other contest. I think they're fighting over a girl or some money or something. I don't really remember.
Huh?
Exactly. But
I don't think I've seen it either.
There is an episode of Columbo with Leslie Nielsen before Leslie Nielsen started being known for comedy. And it was completely straight role, and it was really strange.
He was a space captain.
Well, he's just this guy. He was the murderer, and it was so bizarre because watching Leslie Nielsen on TV, you expect him to do something insane.
Was his career arc
he was
like
just
the opposite of
normal.
Robin Williams, where he started out as a murderer and went on to be a comic genius?
Yeah, and then back to being a murderer.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Did Leslie Nielsen actually rise as a vampire, dead and loving it, and is murdering people as we speak?
Yeah, maybe that movie murdered some
people. He died fairly close to here. Did you guys feel the waves of psychic energy?
No.
Yeah, he lived in Scottsdale. He used to come into the Trader Joe's where Roy worked.
Oh, I had no idea.
I didn't know that either.
You didn't know that Leslie Nielsen shopped at Trader Joe's. There's really no reason for you to know that. It wasn't on his Wikipedia page. It was, however, on Does Leslie Nielsen Shop at Trader Joe's or Not.com, which has always said yes until he died, and then it said no.
No.
So it served double duty.
The Tunnels and Trolls guys apparently also live in Scottsdale.
Yeah, one of whom is also dead.
Huh.
No.
What?
I'm thinking of somebody else.
Oh.
Some RPG guy died recently.
I was always under the impression that Tunnels and Trolls was a British thing.
Oh, I had no preconceived notions, but I hadn't actually even heard of it until like a year ago, and then
I had a copy back in the day.
Really? I get it confused with Mazes and Monsters, which was that movie where Tom Hanks becomes obsessed with Dungeons and Dragons and kills somebody who he thinks is a troll.
So was that an early role for him? So was he early a murderer or late a murderer?
Oh, yeah, huh? I don't know. Would you consider him to be a murderer in Bosom Buddies? I mean. His dress was to die for.
Whatever happened to Peter Solari?
He killed that.
Well, he was in Newhart.
Was he in Newhart?
No, I don't know. Maybe he actually became a murderer.
Oh.
And that's why we don't hear anything about him. We just don't recognize him because now he is like Peter Anton Solari or something.
Oh, because of the middle name.
Yeah, he earned his middle name by murdering 50 people.
I was going to say, that's only serial killers.
That's how it works. Like Robert Paulson style. That's the way that you earn your middle name, is either by killing a president or like 50 non-presidents.
Yeah, and that, which adds up to like a president. Yeah,
sure.
A president's worth of regular people.
I mean, I guess, so let's say that you had to make some sort of a Sophie's Choice where there were two, I don't know, trains. One leaves Los Angeles and one leaves New York. And it doesn't really matter how long it takes. But basically, you are Superman.
Uh-huh.
And the trains are about to hit each other. And one of them has Barack Obama.
Hussein Obama.
Now, we say a president.
Oh, wait.
No. We say a president. Do we mean any president? I mean, maybe it's the guy who liked the hair club for men so much that he bought the company and became the president. So let's say Barack Obama versus 50 serial killers. Hmm. Which train do you save? If you're Superman, why can't you save both trains? You could just go pick up one of the trains and the other one would scoot along and eat it.
You just stop them from hitting each other. Serial killers can't give me a medal.
Okay.
Okay.
They might be able to give me like a freezer full of sausage.
Imagine what you could accomplish with a grateful army of serial killers.
Oh, that's the thing.
You could just declare yourself president of whatever the fuck you wanted to be president of, Riff.
Yeah, yeah. It's true.
Hmm. This is a good plan.
Yeah.
So we just need to set up this algebra problem.
And therefore become rulers.
What have you guys been up to?
I'll look up serial killers on Craigslist.
That's going to work. I think you have to look up free hand jobs.
Oh.
If you want to find serial killers on Craigslist, you have to...
Back rubs.
I think that's the one you get for kidney donations.
Some too good to be true.
I wonder if we should write a procedural thing where it takes a Craigslist post and translates it into what it's actually
There's a Grease Monkey script that just says of every Craigslist post, this guy will murder you, this guy will rape you, this guy will steal your kidneys, this guy will rape you and then steal your kidneys.
Yeah.
It translates free couch into free sack of bed bugs.
Right.
Okay, I think this is a pretty good idea. We're going to make a fortune, guys. Grease Monkey scripts make a lot of money, right?
Yeah.
You buy them in the Grease Monkey marketplace.
What have you been up to, Hair Zach?
Oh, I was about to ask you guys the same thing.
No, you did ask us. I'm redirecting the question.
Bronchial pain and a little bit of diarrhea.
Cool.
Mm.
Yeah. I know our listeners get sad if we don't talk about poop.
Bodily function.
In the first few minutes.
Yeah.
No, I don't know. I've been reading The Bourne Legacy by Robert Ludlum.
Okay.
It's pretty good.
Ludlum and not Ludlow?
Yes. Neal Stephenson tricked me into becoming interested in spy books by writing a book that pretended to be about video games but was actually a book about spies. And then I thought, what other books about spies can I read?
What book was that?
Rimdi.
Oh, I still haven't read that.
It is, you know, it is about sort of a World of Warcraft style world nominally, but it is more or less a spy thriller.
Oh, that sounds right up my alley. Oh, I have too many things to read. I also have to read Warren Ellis's Gun Machine and that book that Zach Parsons from Something Awful wrote.
Which one's that?
I don't remember the title of it, but it's apparently really good.
Is it My Tank is Fight?
No, this is a novel that was more nonfiction.
Okay.
I'm still like halfway through Telegraph Avenue, which is one of the Idle Thumbs book club books.
You're not reading any Nabokov.
No.
At this point. It gets spooky.
Yeah.
He's like, he's still writing books.
I only read him
even
at Halloween.
He's a ghost.
I read them out loud with a flashlight under
your chin. Yeah. That's good. Oh, man. You know, I've come up with the new trend in body modification.
Oh, yeah?
You cut a hole. You hollow out your lower jaw
so
that you can shine a flashlight directly into your mouth.
Wow.
And the light's not even diffuse anymore. Yeah. No, and then you put a little cardboard cut out of a ghost on there, and then you lean your head back and it's like, oh, there's a ghost in my mouth. Oh, wait, I'm sorry. I've just been eating Boo Berry cereal.
Boo Barnacles.
So I've tried an experiment for the last like 8 or 10 days. And I wanted to tell you guys about it. It's a new lifestyle protocol that I've decided to experiment with the adoption of, and I call it no comment because I haven't read any comments on anything on the internet in 10 days. Yeah.
Do you feel like you have less information?
I have no idea what the fuck is going on, guys.
So does that mean you have just not gone to Metafilter?
No, I have gone to Metafilter and I have read the, I have looked at the articles and I have followed links from the articles that I felt were interesting. I just have not clicked through to read any of the comments.
Metafilter is generally okay. But I don't read here's the question, comments anywhere else.
Aren't the top posts on Metafilter effectively comments?
They are. I guess, right? But they are moderated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. I guess anyone who has a Metafilter account can post them, but in general, like, they don't.
Okay.
And, you know, they are not an off-the-cuff thing where you call someone a faggot. I mean, not that Metafilter posts generally are that, or comments generally are that. They are a thing that you say, I'm going to craft this thing to share with these people because I'm a person who knows about things or found a cool video of a cat on the internet. Right. I haven't been to Reddit at all.
Wow.
Because that I do sort of...
I mean, that's also...
It is the same thing with just a much, much broader user base.
Right.
Who didn't pay $5. But no, you know, the parts where it's been rough is like reading stories on Polygon where, you know, I kind of want to know... There are 10 comments on this.
And the authors will often comment in those threads.
But more often than not, what you see on Polygon is just... You know, there'll be news about Star Wars The Old Republic, and then there'll be somebody posting a comment, which is like, you know, should have known they were doomed once they nerfed my class. And then there'll be like 9 paragraphs about all of the bad decisions that they made, which just happened to be things that slightly diminished some number that this particular guy was trying to make bigger on his character. Mm. I just realized that I spend a tremendous amount of my time on the internet just reading. And I often approach it like, I am going, no, not at all. Like staring at a car wreck, just like Schadenfreude. Yeah. Like, I want to go, oh man, this is going to have a lot of outrage in the comments.
You used to be super excited when somebody would post something on Metafilter about...
Any number of things, like racism or rape or misogyny or which way to wipe your ass, whether you stand up or sit down.
Circumcision.
Like, no, I just would like gleefully read like people just yelling at each other from these like wholly incompatible but not actually all that divergent moral standpoints.
Okay.
And I realize that that is not doing anyone
not
any
a good
like
of
it is
time.
Not a good
I've,
use
I've
of...
had to start reining myself in from reading those too.
I never went down that path. I just didn't care what people said about stuff.
You know, I'll read feedback on stuff that we make.
Yeah, well, that's I feel like right. That's important.
Yeah, it's part of our job. But I don't care what some commenter on Kotaku thinks really about anything.
I think one of the ones I read, I think maybe Destructoid has a feature where the author can tag some particularly good comments and they show up at the top of the thing and I'll read those, but Gama Sutra seems to have a decent comment section too.
Gama Sutra is an industry
publication,
I feel like. I don't know how many people who aren't
it
making
is,
games
yeah,
are
it
reading
is, it's
that.
A little more high minded. I mean, most of the people who would just post like lol SWTOR for fuckers or whatever are not going to have the patience to read an entire Gama Sutra article. Like the way that you would watch a few seconds of a YouTube video and just say like nice tits.
Somebody posted to Facebook, they were like, they saw like a lighting diagram, they're a photographer, and they were like, where can I see more of like this kind of stuff? And I was like, well, have you ever checked out Photo District News, which was like a trade magazine that I read when I was doing freelance photography, and they had never even heard of it. And I feel like those are like, there are these industry magazines that are like actually really good and full of content that they don't even bother advertising because their market is so small and everybody who's like really serious about it theoretically already knows about it. But now that the internet does
kind of
a lot of this
kills
stuff.
That. I mean, I get Game Informer on my iPad and I pretty much never get around to actually reading it.
But there's almost never anything in Game Informer that you didn't already know from just paying attention to the internet, right? Like that. And I don't know, you know, that's got to be more or less true of whatever industry, depending on how much non-internet thought is going on about a given thing, which, you know, video games lives on the internet.
Right.
You know,
that's true.
But yeah, I'm sure there are places where there are comments that are worth reading. I just don't, you know, and I'm not saying no comments ever forever. I'm just saying I wanted to try this because I felt like While I would just make fun of somebody for fucking around on Facebook all the time because I don't get any value out of that. Like, I just would not...
I also don't read comments on Facebook posts 99% of the time.
Sure. But there are people who mostly what they're doing when they are sitting at a computer for as long as I sit at a computer is they're fucking around on Facebook, and I don't even know what that is because I can't imagine doing that. And that is how they would feel about me reading... Just spending an hour reading a 500 comment Metafilter comment thread.
If you don't silence most of the people on anything. Your Facebook, if you have like a couple hundred Facebook friends and you don't silence anybody, you can just sit there and read a stream of people's thoughts.
And that's the danger. But it is novel. I mean, there might be something good in there. So it's like just this crazy Skinner box that the drop rates on the items depends on how cool your friends are.
I mean, yeah.
I just want everyone who reads minimumsafedistance.org to know that I always read the comments on minimumsafedistance.org.
It's okay to read the comments on stuff that you've made. That is, in fact, I think the only people, including the people who write the comments, the only people who should ever read the comments on something is the people who made the thing that's being commented on.
What if there was the ability to comment on everything on the internet, but it was only visible to the author? I wonder what that would mean. Would there be 1/10 as many comments? Would there be 1,000th as many comments? Because I don't think most people would comment on it if they weren't thinking that other people were going to read their comments.
Vi Hart did a YouTube video recently talking about comments like that and her various categories for the sort of people that leave negative comments. And a lot of them she feels are just people looking to get their own attention for themselves.
Just a troll. I mean, that's kind of what trolling is all about, right? It's like... I guess there's the desire to annoy...
To provoke a reaction.
And you can try to do that of the author, I guess, but you're much more satisfied when you're provoking the outrage of dozens of people instead of just an individual.
Mm-hmm. Well, I ought to be pretty satisfied. I regularly do things that provoke the outrage of dozens of people. There's never a comment.
All you have to do is change a number from like 5 to 4 and you can...
Yeah. Well, luckily, I would never, ever do that. Any number that is 5 is already perfect.
What about you, Riff? What have you been up to?
Oh, well, I don't know how exciting it is for discussion, but I started my new diet.
Yeah?
Again?
Yep.
What's your diet this time?
Yeah, what is it?
Well, it's
just salad dressing.
It is, it's not very strict. It's like low carb and...
Like South Beach?
I mean, it's nothing with a name. I'm just trying to not eat a lot of carbs and eat more things like ham and eggs and and spinach.
So it's the Dr. Seuss and Popeye diet.
I've started like eating, like I always have eaten a lot of hummus, but I just, instead of eating it with tortillas, I'm eating it with like spinach leaves now and stuff like that.
Wow, that seems like it'd be really hard.
It's not bad.
I've done that before.
The spinach leaf?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Huh.
Yeah,
I'm a fan of the take a red bell pepper, slice it into sections, and dip those in the hummus.
Sounds good.
I did it with carrots for a long time.
Carrots always get stuck in your sinuses.
I'm also using your thing where you're allowed to eat whatever you want on the weekend, just to keep myself from going insane.
But that's because I don't eat anything on Monday through Friday.
Hold on, guys.
I need to go purge.
If I can't, like.
Occasionally have a
No one is ever going to stick to a diet where you can never have another candy bar. Yeah, like it's just not going to happen.
Knowing that, okay, I've got a box of Nutty Bars in the cabinet and I can have one if I can just stick it out till Saturday.
What's a Nutty Bar? That's fine.
It's those little Debbie kind of peanut butter wafer.
Oh, things. It's the one you eat with your nose.
What?
I'm thinking of a Nutty Bar.
Yes.
Okay.
Melissa just recently started a sort of similar kind of diet thing, and she's. There have been two benefits to it. One is she's cooking a lot of meals, and so now she's just like making me dinner a lot of the nights of the week, which has been really, really nice. And like, I was like, you know, I could deal with this. I'll do all the dishes, and you know, I'll.
I could deal. Oh, having a woman cook all my meals for me, I can handle this.
Well, no, like it's just like I feel like this would be a good division of labor. And we arrived at this naturally. It wasn't through gender roles or anything. It was just like she wanted a particular kind of set of foods, and I was like, okay. Like, the way that I have been making food for you is by going to a restaurant and having somebody else.
Going to a restaurant and paying the bill, yeah. I mean, that's how I do it. I would rather cook and have somebody else do the dishes.
Yeah, that's been how we've been basically, like, she'll she'll occasionally wash something, but I do almost all the dishes for
really everywhere. Whenever you're in town, you do all the dishes at my house.
Yeah.
Your threshold for the dishes need to get done is way lower than
that. And I like it is a task that, especially if you keep on top of it, it is something that takes 5 or 10 minutes.
And then you're done. I've finished. There's a list of things in front of you, which are dishes.
Yeah.
It's very
satisfying.
Maybe you are just enough shorter than me that you can wash dishes without experiencing pain.
There's no pain. Yeah.
Like Roy and I have the same thing. Like we both hate washing dishes. Yeah, because if you wash dishes for like 3 or 4 minutes and your back just aches.
I don't like.
See,
you don't like
being tall is terrible.
Sponges that have a sponge on them.
No,
and your sponge, like you're
Jesus,
just like
fucking.
What are those called?
Bacteria harbor. They're just not, green scrubbies.
Green scrubby. Yeah. They're so like, I like the Scotch hybrid pads. Ones that are like a green scrubby and a sponge.
No, those are a hybrid between an effective dishwashing material and a germ petri dish. A germ preserve.
What you want is the green scrubby bit so that you can get the crap off whatever you're washing, and then you want the sponge that will hold some fucking soap.
Because
the green scrubby bit is just awful at that.
No, you just occasionally squirt a little bit more soap on it.
No. You go through like 1,000 times more soap.
So what you do when you start washing
sponges,
dishes
in Arizona,
there's
no problem with sponges.
Is a problem with them, and it is that you leave them alone and they get a smell on them that you cannot get rid of without
when you are done with them, you just squeeze it out and you put it out and it is dry in like 10 seconds.
What do you call those things a barber uses? Autoclave.
Razor.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. No, not a murder barber.
An autoclave? Do barbers use autoclaves? Really?
Don't they just have those jars of blue?
The blue liquid. Yeah, but
I thought that was hospitals. I never knew that like a barber. I guess maybe
like
some
a would. Tattoo shop.
My grandpa had an autoclave that was from his barber shop.
Anyway, autoclave. I got a really nice axe that has autoclave abilities.
Oh, good. Here's what you do. You fill your mouth with dish soap, and then at the beginning of doing the dishes, the one issue with this is that you can no longer chew tobacco while you're washing dishes.
Sure.
Unless you're really good at keeping the dish soap in one cheek and the tobacco in the other cheek. Then whenever the rag runs out of soap, you just spit a little bit more soap on it.
I have a question about your grandfather. Who shaved him?
I think he just shaved himself. You're trying to decide which barber to go to. his hair looked like shit.
I was trying to solve that paradox.
Okay.
Who shaves the only barber in town?
Barber who shaves everyone who doesn't shave themselves?
Use Occam's razor. I've never heard that. I've never heard that paradox.
Really?
Yeah, explain it.
If the barber shaves everybody in town, but he only shaves people who don't shave themselves, then who shaves the barber?
Okay. Does the barber live in town? I figured out one way to get around this.
Tricky.
Maybe the barber is a hermit.
Maybe he commutes.
Or a traveler.
Yeah.
Just goes from town to town.
Okay.
So as long as he's not in a town, he can shave himself.
Yeah.
I don't think work with the, but whatever.
What about you, Kevin?
Let's see here. The past week has been Mystery Hunt.
And vomiting.
Oh, right.
I only vomited the once. It's been mostly coming out the other side.
So ear vomiting.
Yes.
Feet.
The back of my head.
Just projectile foot sweating.
Yeah. My pillows are getting really gross.
And wait, you flew home like Iron Man, not on an airplane.
That would be great.
No, it wouldn't.
Well, not
flying by spraying vomit out of your feet? No, that would be awful, Kevin.
But the ability to fly not being in a plane
would
be great.
You'd have to eat to sustain that.
Yeah, that's probably not a good... Well, like, if
they're really
rockets are like 90% fuel, so you would weigh a lot less. You'd have to eat a lot before you left.
You'd have to pack all your guts into like one corner of your rib cage so you could put a fuel tank in there.
Well, maybe if you had really high efficiency fuels, they would come out with really strong propellant capabilities.
Okay.
Yeah?
So you're saying just eat like napalm.
Yeah.
So this is what you do.
For breakfast.
You fill one of your cheeks with dish soap, and then you fill your other cheek with kerosene, and then the middle with styrofoam, and then you swish it around and swallow it, and then repeat until you are full enough of napalm that you can fly Iron Man style via napalm foot rockets.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, Mystery Hunt.
Good.
Was pretty had a great. Our team came in, I think, third in the end. And apparently we were in the lead for most of the hunt because we were able to solve a puzzle that was basically unsolvable. So, and I think we did that just by like, we had like guessing. Half the answer and guessing really cleverly about the other half.
What was the half that you had and what was the half that you guessed?
We had the end of the phrase, which was like on charges, and the phrase that we had to, the correct answer phrase was high electron charges. That was the answer to, spoilers, that was the answer to the second round meta puzzle in the 2013 MIT Mystery Hunt. So that put us in the lead for a long time because all the other meta puzzles were like insanely, insanely hard. Hmm. So there were two easy ones, that one, and then three other really, really hard ones that I don't think we ever solved.
We were talking about that briefly in chat today about how it must be really hard to tune the difficulty of a set of puzzles when you know that they're going to be solved by
world-class National Puzzle League people.
MIT world-class Puzzle League guys of team sizes of arbitrary largeness.
So I think we had 40 or 50 people on our team, and some of the larger teams are like 100 and some. So I felt pretty good about our performance overall. It's weird. I want to get to the end of the mystery hunt. I want to do the runaround, and then I want to get to the coin and not pick it up. Right? Like, because I don't think we actually really want to write and run a hunt, right? It is so much work.
I mean, it seems like out of the 50 people, 3 or 4 people would
take up that mantle.
Yeah, sure. But you would definitely be one of them.
Yeah,
if you were on the team that won, you would not be able to stop yourself from doing it.
And that would just eat up so much time and energy. I can't imagine.
And then who would make the video games for the nice people?
I know, right? Yeah, there were some interesting puzzles. I think all the archive is already up, so you can go and look at the puzzles and the answers and stuff. But
where would our listeners find that if they want to see it?
Do a Google search for MIT Mystery Hunt, and from that site.
So you're suggesting that if our listeners wanted to find something, they go to Google, you said, and then just type what they're looking for?
Yeah.
I know Rachel was working on one the other night that was apparently based on Gangnam Style.
Yeah, they did some sort of weird video where they took two separate videos and somehow blended them together. It was weird.
Hmm.
There's a lot of stuff in this hunt. And it was a tremendous amount of like research intensive puzzles, which was pretty rough. There were 6 rounds of like regular puzzle rounds or whatever, but it was the same problem that I think they've had in a couple of years previous, where they had so many ideas for meta puzzles that they wanted to include them all, and so there were like sub meta puzzles.
Yeah.
So like the final round was thematically based on a Rubik's cube. So there were 9 puzzles. The center of each side was like a meta puzzle for all the puzzles on that side, and each cube of the Rubik's cube was a single puzzle. So like the corners, the answer to the puzzles on the corners were used in 3 separate meta puzzles.
Huh. So every answer fed into 2
at
or
least
3.
Two. Yeah, 2 or 3.
Puzzles. So a meta puzzle for those listeners who don't know how nerd fests work is you'll have a puzzle that will result in a word
and or then short phrase.
All of the puzzles in a round will result in a set of words that are themselves a puzzle.
Yes.
Sometimes using additional information from elsewhere in the round, sometimes not.
The meta puzzles for that round were just almost entirely just a picture of the side of the cube. It was like, these are the 9 puzzles, like these are the 9 solutions. Sometimes they would give you an orientation in case that was important. Like these are the puzzles that you're using and this is the side. There was one where you had to be looking at it from inside the cube because of the way that they'd organized it. And the name of the meta puzzle round was the only hint that you had for like what was going on.
Were there any particular puzzles that struck you as a thing that might be of interest to our listeners?
I spent a lot of time doing meta puzzle work because that, for some reason, like has been where I've been able to help the team the most.
Were there any particularly cool meta puzzles?
They're always kind of interesting.
You talked about that infinite cryptogram thing. Yeah.
I'm still not entirely sure how that was solved because the
describe what you were presented with
this puzzle was kind of fascinating. It was, you got a page of text that was just it was like just a bunch of characters of letters, no spaces or anything.
Seemingly random.
Yes. It looks seemingly random, and then you could advance to additional pages of it. The name of the puzzle was called Infinite Cryptogram, and you could put in, like, you know, I could look at page 1,000, I could look at page 1,000,000 or whatever, and it was just text and text and text and text. It was a simple Caesar shift to get it to all resolve to, like, radio call signs, like Alpha Bravo Charlie stuff. Mm-hmm. So then you could then collapse that down to another string of text that would then also Caesar shift to another set of Alpha Bravo Charlie type stuff, which you could then collapse to that and then Caesar shift again. And you could pretend, like, I'm guessing that it was probably designed in such a way that that actually was, like, just infinite.
How would it be if it looped?
Basically. But it's not, because the puzzle isn't in finding the text. It's finding in the, by how much you have to Caesar shift the alphabet to get the next set of letters. That's where the message started to fall out, right? So, like, the first letter, like, the first one was, like, 11 letters. Like, it was, like, a Caesar shift of 11, which is K, and then two Caesar shifts of 5 in the next two levels to get EE. And there was, like, keep decoding was, like, the first, and then you're like, ah, fuck, keep decoding. Like, but the problem is that in order to get the next level, it's each one requires 5 times as much data to get even a single word, right? Which the first couple of levels, it's really easy to just do that by hand. But even writing a program to just start pulling pages of text off the website, it's like, to get 30 characters, you have to have, like, 10 million pages of text. It was not entirely clear to us until, like, the 40th or 50th character, like, what was the actual solution to the puzzle. So, like, I think some people on our team figured out a method to look very far into the, like, the puzzle stack, pull out a chunk, and then do the Caesar shift operation just to get a single letter out, which would tell you what shift was supposed to be for the next level. But I don't know that for sure. I don't know exactly what they were doing. But they basically wrote a Mathematica program to, like, do some analysis on this thing to break it down to, like, make it. And, like, you know, like, that's awesome, but, like, that was beyond my ability to help them solve it. So, like, that's the kind of crazy shit.
Codes.
Man. Yeah. And it's just, like, that's neat, but it's beyond, it's, like, beyond me. It's, like, a level beyond what I could ever hope to do, you know.
We should make a puzzle contest for normal people.
Mm. So, I'm thinking about that. What, like, somebody from NPL comes in and they solve all your puzzles in, like, an hour that you've spent, you know, like, 2 weeks. Kid, you said kick them out.
Yeah, no ringers.
which would be fine if they wouldn't then publicize the answers, right? Like, if there's any kind of,
all right, so we go to Dan Katz's house.
Yeah.
We break in. We hold a broken piece of glass to his neck and say, Dan, I know you're going to solve these
puzzles. He's not even the best puzzle solver in the country. Minutes. There's like 6 or 7
He's
people.
He's not the best. He's just the one who will tell the others. So, Dan, we understand that you can solve these puzzles in 5 minutes. If you do, we're going to kill you. Then we're going to kill everyone you like.
Oh.
And then we're going to kill everybody you kind of like.
He probably likes us.
No, he doesn't. Not after this.
Not anymore, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh. Hmm. That's an interesting self-reflective property of that activity.
I thought this through, buddy.
Yeah, no, I think a lower,
let's just make it let's make them unspoilable.
We could make them unsolvable.
Okay, we could write one puzzle for every person who's going to participate in the hunt.
That's a good idea.
Makes it even harder to tune the difficulty, though.
Mm, yeah.
What have you been playing, Riff?
Root beer. I played a bunch of Hotline Miami. I beat it, although I haven't unlocked the the secret ending that explains what's going on.
Oh, weird.
Yeah, it's interesting. There's a, like, every chapter has a puzzle piece hidden in it, which is just like a single out of place purple pixel. Yeah. And the one mask, the owl mask, the function of it is to make those pixels glow so they're a little easier to spot. Wow. And when you collect them all, there's a menu option that brings them up, and they're all Scrabble letters. And so if you rearrange them into a sentence, then that becomes a computer password that you can use in the epilogue when you're playing a different character after you beat the game.
Wow.
Yeah. So I haven't done that yet, but finished the main storyline. It's very good game. Once you get a handle on the controls and can move around and attack dudes smoothly, it's like really fast paced.
Moving with one hand and shooting with the other.
But it's not really, right? It's like moving with one hand and attacking towards the mouse cursor.
Yeah.
But
it's
you're
like
mostly
moving with one hand and rotating with
you're
the
mostly
other,
melee yeah. attacking.
But I thought you didn't have to use a mouse. Maybe I misunderstood the controls. So it's,
I don't know.
I'm pretty sure that you have to use a
mouse. And keyboard, okay. Yeah.
I thought you attacked in a direction based on mm-mm. another set of keys.
No.
Okay.
Because you need a lot more granularity of direction to attack in.
Hmm. Okay.
So you would need either a joystick or
right.
a control joystick. Game stick. Are you finding yourself ruminating on the nature of violence and the nature of violence in video games and the nature of video games and violent video games?
Was that theoretically part of the...
Yeah, not really. I mean, at first, the game made me feel really weird because I think I talked about this on a previous show. Some of the music is from that RPG Maker game, Space Funeral, which is really kind of bizarre and insane, and so it put me in that sort of insane frame of mind to play it. But once I got used to that, it's, I don't know, it's video game.
So the music was the insane thing, not the mass murder.
Yeah. But there's indications in some of the between level bits that maybe some or all of this is not really happening to the character, and having finished it, I'm still not sure how much of what goes on in the game is real and how much isn't. So it's, I don't know, it's an interesting mystery.
But and you don't find out unless you've found all the individual pixels.
Right.
Wow.
And even then, you know.
Even then,
out.
It might not be completely clear, yeah. But, yeah,
it's
I
just
mean,
a Shakira
it's,
video.
It's a fun game. It's like, I don't know, it's like Binding of Isaac crossed with... like an order of operations puzzle if it was directed by Quentin Tarantino.
Yeah, it's sort of displayed like early GTA, like
yeah.
GTA 1, kind of top down.
And there's...
It's made in Game Maker, isn't it? Like it's got...
Yeah, I think you're right.
It's just the weird like... It's pixel art, but it's like pixel art where everything is like 5x5 pixels and so they're rotated in a way that's really gross.
Yeah, and there's a lot of stuff of like, you know, all right, I need to... kill this guy and take his weapon and then throw that weapon at this guy and do that quickly enough so that I can turn around and pick up this weapon and kill the dog before the dog kills me. And then if I stand at this door and wait for the guy to come next to the door, I can kick the door in and knock him out so that I can grab his weapon and kill this other guy. And and just once you get into it, it starts to click really fast.
But you like have to do it 6 times to figure that out, probably.
Yeah, basically. But you die hundreds of times. Like okay. The boss fights, like you'll die 20 times before you even have an idea of what's going on.
Okay.
But it you come back, you hit R and you respawn, just like in VVVVVV or one of those. So it's not really a barrier.
Okay. I just accidentally read some comments.
Oh, no.
I was trying to figure out because the art style reminded me of this game that everybody's been talking about lately that I couldn't stand playing because the graphics are so gross, called Teleglitch.
I've heard of that. I don't know.
The screenshots I've seen of Hotline Miami were like, but you know, not seeing anything fluid, I didn't want to make any judgments.
Yeah.
Yep. Also been playing a lot of Fallout 3. I don't know that I have anything.
Are you finding
new
anything
to
cool?
say about it? Yeah, it's. I mean, it's
first
Fallout
time
3.
Through?
It's
do you have
of the best
all the DLC installed?
Ever. I do. I haven't started playing any of it yet.
Is that if you have it all installed, can you not just accidentally come across it?
No, it's all pretty compartmentalized.
Yeah, I mean,
I thought it was just out in the world.
It is out in the world, but it's not it's not in places I think you're likely to wander to.
Okay. Well, how does it work? One of them is you get a radio signal once you hit the appropriate level to go to the Operation Anchorage stuff, but then it's like a gate that you have to go through, like to go into the simulator, and then it isn't just entirely distinct.
Oh, right. The
I guess the mother.
The
mothership
DLC itself is distinct, but the entrances to it exist on the regular map. Yeah,
that's how I just I've not yet played that.
They're
game
like tunnel,
at all.
Like at least one of them is like a tunnel off the edge of the map.
Mm-hmm.
I guess Mothership Zeta, the transporter, is where the ship is.
The what's the other one? The swamp one. That the
Point Lookout.
Yeah, Point Lookout. The boat that takes you there is just at the mouth of the river in the corner of the map.
Yeah, that was my favorite because it was just more Fallout 3.
I'm eager. That's a lot of the reason why I'm replaying it is because I didn't get to play Point Lookout the first time because it made my PS3 crash too bad.
Oh, right. So the reason that you're doing this is because you now have a machine that will do Windows.
Yeah, you got a PC running the Windows and 3 monitors.
Yeah.
I haven't actually looked at your setup yet. I've been trying to keep my distance because I didn't want to give you the flu.
I mean, it looks basically the same except it's a third monitor.
Yeah, well, that's cool. That's 3366.
Emily's been playing more New Vegas.
Oh, yeah.
Which kind of makes me want to play New Vegas with that developer super hardcore mod on. But then it kind of doesn't.
Playing,
what I want is to
play. It sounded
like
a good idea, but when I started playing Fallout 3 again, I realized, wow, I go through a lot of stim packs. I don't know if I would be very good.
I kind of want to play Fallout 3 with that mod pack installed. New Vegas, I did not like nearly as much as Fallout. It seems like there's a weird. So I used to read Metafilter comment threads about this before my new enlightened age where I don't give a shit that there's a huge schism between the people who think that Fallout 3 is the best Fallout game and the people who think that Fallout New Vegas is the best Fallout game. I'm definitely on the Fallout 3 side.
Yeah, the buildings, I mean, like buildings and office complexes and factories are much more interesting to explore than caves.
Yeah, Fallout 3 felt more open world to me than New Vegas did. Mm-hmm. Like New Vegas, you started out and you were super hemmed in by the fact that if you did not go south from the starting town, you immediately just ran into shit that was
death claws and
too
shit
hard
right next
for
to,
you
yeah.
to fight. And it was like Cazadoras on one side and death claws on the other side. And here I am, gotta go south because that's where the game wants me to go. And it just seemed like it felt like a lot more limited experience. And also, New Vegas felt more like you could just wander around for a really, really long time and there was nothing out there. Hmm. Whereas in Fallout 3, even if it was just nothing, even if it was just like a building that didn't have a quest in it or anything, like it was a building that you could go inside, right? Like you didn't find just like, oh, I'll go down to this lake and see what's in these shacks. Oh, not, like these shacks don't have interactable doors.
Yeah. There are, I am finding here and there non-interactable buildings in Fallout 3, but they're not, like, you can tell that they're non-interactable way before you get up to them because they have, like, that sort of distinctive texture and the windows are all glazed over.
In Skyrim,
the windows are glazed
much
over.
Prefer the dwarven-style ruins to cave-style ruins?
Yeah.
You did?
Yeah, definitely.
Huh.
Dwarven ruins were really cool.
You know, they looked neat and they told a cooler story, but there wasn't really a lot going on in there. Mm. Right? There were like two kinds of enemies and there was like three or four kinds of things that you could pick up.
I mean they
one
had
or two
they tended
of which
to have
were
interesting,
of any value.
They had like traps and I don't know, the layouts were often pretty interesting depending on how the place had fallen into ruin and
they would
collapsed.
Occasionally like break into a section of cave and then come back into a section of dwarven ruin. Dwarmer.
I mean, I enjoyed the caves in Fallout 3 that were, like, inhabited.
Mm, yeah, okay.
You know, and where, like, you know, ramps had been set up between various parts of it and stuff. I want to know where the fuck on Earth there is even a single cave like every cave in every video game. Like, I've been in a couple caves in real life, and it's like, all right, well, the way you get into this cave is by squeezing into, like, this crack between two boulders that's, like, 1 foot wide, and then maybe there is somewhere in the cave where you can stand up, but probably not.
There's a lot of small caves like that, but there are some gigantic caves. I mean, there's...
But there are not 200 gigantic caves that we could walk to from here in an hour.
No.
There is not even one. From almost anywhere on Earth, there is not a cave that you can walk to in an hour.
They've not all been discovered, right? That's part of the thing that's cool about caves, is that there are a bunch that are still probably underground.
You get there and no one's been there because there aren't torches all over the place.
Exactly.
That's the other thing I've been playing is Minecraft.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been setting up my my underground rail systems for automatically transporting goods out from my automatic operating farm.
Jeez. Don't you have to be within like a certain radius of your farm for it to be working?
Fortunately, my town is fairly compact. Yeah, it's about 130 blocks radius of where stuff stays loaded.
Okay.
But that's my town is small enough that's feasible.
But that's an entire like vertical column, right? Like if you built it tall, mm-hmm. that would be much more doable.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm just waiting for the next expansion to come out so I can install the hoppers and redstone comparators that will make those tracks work.
Jeez. Everybody is always waiting for the next Minecraft patch.
I mean, I'm playing. I'm setting up, preparing for the stuff that will be coming out.
When I was sick and started playing through, I guess I wasn't sick. I was recovering from surgery. I think of that as being sick.
It was basically the same.
I was played some Mistcraft, and then I was like, yeah, I should see what's going on our multiplayer server. And then I got, Emily got me this little set of 6x6x6 magnetic cubes, and I built a little spire out of them on my desk, and I was like, I'm going to go build that next to my house in Minecraft. I'm like, you know what? I'm also going to spend like 50 or 60 hours making my house cooler. And so I've just been hollowing out a mountain and paving the inside of it.
You've been putting all upside down stairs and moldings and stuff everywhere?
Just on the bottoms of the stairways.
You've been putting upside down stairs on the...
Yeah, it's where they go.
Huh.
No, it's to make it so instead of your stairways being a stairway on top and all jagged on the bottom, they're just a stairway.
Oh,
like a freestanding stairway, yeah.
Okay.
It's kind of hard. It's a lot of different moving around operations
things. Yeah, you have to get used to like where you have to click on a block to make a stairway orient the way you want it to.
What about you, Kevin?
I've not played much. I was mostly doing Mystery Hunt stuff. I played a little bit of a Kongregate game called Koosh. Q-O-O-S-H.
Okay.
Is that the one you emailed me?
No.
Okay, I haven't checked that one out yet.
It is highly, highly derivative in style and presentation of Portal, and also a little bit of that Warp game that we played. So the mechanics are you're this little alien dude in a set of test chambers. Right.
Okay, I know which Warp game you're talking about.
And you can transition between being a warrior, a rogue, and a wizard.
No, you can teleport a very short distance, and if you hold the button down, same button that you use to teleport, it will slow time down. So you can do sort of high precision jumping and warping, which is okay. Like the mechanics of that work out pretty well, and it makes some puzzles which would otherwise basically be frustratingly impossible feasible. But like the writing in it is so derivative, like it even references Portal. You spend some of your time like trying to get to these like pieces of candy which are scattered around. That's sort of like one of the collection mechanics. And they were like, in some games or in some test chambers I hear they tell you that you're gonna get cake, but you never do. I'm like, you know, just make your own game. Like you're already borrowing so much from this, like, why put these nods in that are so, you know, it's...
Well, but that's what you do when you're starting out, right?
Nods are okay. There's subtlety and there's clumsiness.
Yeah, it's it was for me. It was very off-putting.
The shit that we make is full of off-putting, clumsy references. Oh yeah, but
that's, I feel like that's kind of our specific milieu.
We're specifically just trying to be bad at writing for video games.
On the other hand, the level design was pretty good and pretty compelling. And they did a pretty good job of using the mechanics that they'd come up with in a compelling way. It's like a sideways platforming game, mostly 2D platforming. And it was like, there were like puzzles that I had to like think about and actually spend some time approaching. Since I've been laying up and trying to recuperate past couple of days, I have played a little bit of Mario and Luigi's Bowser's Inside Story.
Had you played the previous ones in the series?
No, this is the first of those games that I have played.
Well, it's weird because that's also the newest of that series.
It's just the one that people were talking about, and I was like, I guess I'll get that.
If you enjoy it, Partners in Time is really good too.
I'm coming off of going, because I, like, you know, 2 weeks ago, whatever, I finished Paper Mario, and so that is the game that I'm comparing it and contrasting it to the most, and it's pretty similar in a lot of ways. It's got the like turn-based combat, which I both really like the ways that they have changed it in this game and also really get frustrated by it. So in Paper Mario, it was really important to do the like quick time action type stuff if you wanted to be good at it. But if you failed, it was just like, you know, instead of taking 5 damage by being successful, you would take 7 damage by not being successful. Mm-hmm. Whereas in this game, it goes from taking, you know, 8 or 10 damage to you doing 10 damage to the opponent. Like it is a dramatic, hugely dramatic change in the outcome based on whether or not you hit the button at the right time. Mm-hmm.
It does seem like between Super Mario RPG to Paper Mario to the Mario and Luigi games, it went from marginal bonus to significant bonus to absolutely essential.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I think that there are not a lot of combats, which is they seem to have toned down the number of fights that you have to do to get through a place. And you can probably even avoid a lot of those if you don't want to. And I feel like I've been doing most of the fights, and I feel like I'm out leveling the content pretty quickly. Or at least it seems like the enemies are really easy to defeat, which is totally fine by me. You know, like if I can one or two hit these guys, that's less time spent in combat, and that's great. And similarly, when you level up, you get sort of a small amount of stats to all of your stats, and then you get to pick a stat, and it'll sort of start scrolling through a list of numbers, and you hit a button to get an increase in that one stat. And those can vary from like 1 to probably 6. It depends on which stat you pick and which level you are or whatever. But that has been really frustrating to me, because when I could get up to 6 points in a stat and I only get 1, I feel like a total chump. And I feel like I just want to reload the last time I saved and just do it again.
You don't feel like you just want to let it happen to you and have that be your experience?
No.
I don't really
feel that way either, but
it's just really frustrating.
That's a way somebody could feel.
I was under the impression, I don't know for sure if this is true, but I was under the impression that you get the chances for better numbers off a stat if it's one that you haven't recently upgraded.
That might be true.
Yeah, my understanding of, and I don't remember exactly what I learned about this in its time, but that they did something to make that not as bullshitty as it seems first glance.
If you just like, if I just kept trying to upgrade attack power, whatever, like the first time I did it, the range was from 1 to 5, and then it went from that to like 1 to 4, and then 1 to 3. And I was like, huh. And so then I started looking at other stats, and in fact, the stat that I had never upgraded was 1 to 6. Mm-hmm. But you can still get ones, and 1 is still by far the most common number, right? So maybe.
Wait, how? Why?
What do you mean?
How is 1 the most common number?
So what it is doing is it's cycling through a list of like 30 numbers.
Yeah, it's like a slot machine reel.
Yeah. And so it's still like, you know, half of them are 1, and there's 1 6, and there are 1 or 2 5s, and then like a handful of 3s and 4s.
I see.
Right.
So what if it was presented to you as a, you level up, and every once in a while you get a critical hit, but you don't get to see the die roll?
I don't think, if I was, so like I'm controlling it. right? Like, that's the thing. It's the exact same
Are
problem
you,
with
though?
The fight.
I mean,
I am, because I have reset it to get a 5 instead of a 1.
And you have to put, and you're the one that pushes the button to stop
yeah.
the reel,
you push
regardless
the button
of
the
whether or not that's a true.
But it is, because I've done it and gotten a 1 before, and I'm like, fuck, and then I've gone back and gotten a 5, and the exact same thing. And the numbers are exactly the
no,
same.
No, but I'm saying, can you get a 5 on purpose if
yeah.
you're good at that game?
Yes.
Oh. Well, that's stupid then.
Well, it's frustrating. It's not totally random, and it's not, yeah. And so, like, that's been frustrating, because I feel like it's, if the game does it to me without me having any input, I can be like, oh, that sucks, but I won't want to reload. Whereas if I have input and I could have had a different outcome, and you know, this might just be my having played in the past couple of years almost all of these style games on emulators, where I can just reload. Mm-hmm. I can save and reload at will. So just now playing it on a real DS, where that isn't an option, I think those same kind of
I mean, at some point we just decide that these mechanics don't belong in games, right? I mean, the reason that you don't spend a bunch of time hitting the space bar to reroll stats at the beginning of an RPG is because, wait a minute, this isn't fun. Like, this rewards boring tedium and just screws people who are... because it is not... Like, while at a Dungeons & Dragons table, it is fun to roleplay a guy with an intelligence of 3, it is not fun to play Eye of the Beholder as a guy with a dexterity of 3 who just can never hit an enemy that he tries to attack, right?
If you look at it in the sense of you always get a point in every stat, and sometimes you get a couple points bonus. Awesome.
Well, then they need to not present it in a way that makes it seem like you're losing with a 1, right? If you were opening a present and it had a random number in it, you would be excited when it was 5 and not pissed off when it was 1, because 1 is what the baseline is.
Right.
But because you have seen the possibility of a 5 and you feel like you are an agent in selecting it, then you feel like you have failed.
And you feel like
the game has made you fail.
The scratch card mechanic does not bother me at all. I don't care what I get out of that, because when you buy something at one of the shops, you get a scratch card, which you can scratch something off, and if depending on what it is, you get some of your currency back, and that's totally fine. Like, I don't mind doing that and just seeing one result and be like, okay, well, I guess I got this. I don't know.
The idea that the decision has been made before you got a chance to interact with it is just psychologically powerful, right?
Yeah. Yeah, so that is my one criticism.
They will take what they learned from that and make fucking Sticker Star.
I also am not super psyched about the platforming with 2 characters.
Yeah.
I can see what they're going for, and that there are some interesting puzzle-y type bits, but it is not... there are more moments where I'm just like, oh, God damn it, fucking Luigi fell off the platform again. I have to start all over way bottom.
In the earlier games in that series, in that particular branch of the series, that is used to better effect.
Really?
Like, 3D spaces where you can do things where it's like, all right, well, now Mario is going to jump off of the top of Luigi, or one of us is going to hit the other one with a hammer so that the other one can go off on his own through a small opening or something.
They have that in,
do
in
they?
This one, yeah.
But the Bowser's Inside Story was the first one where your general movements around the world were 2D.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Huh. So.
It is interesting, the split time between being Bowser and being the two of them is kind of an interesting mechanic. Like, the lengths to which they had to go to narratively justify that were pretty intense, but, you know, I definitely want to stick with it and see what it's got to offer.
I feel like these games in the series have also had the best sense of comedy and comic timing in the Mario games.
Bowser's written pretty funny.
Yeah.
Like, the other ones, I don't really care about any of the other characters, but Bowser's pretty good.
And I don't remember which game it was, but I remember there being some really funny, like totally dialogueless and all just like character movement and action that were just featuring like Luigi. They were just hilarious.
Huh.
Where like his, I don't know, like him falling asleep and then suddenly waking up when something happens. They would nail the timing on it to make it really funny. And I was really impressed by that.
And that one part where Mario spits a ping pong ball at Luigi, who swings his dick like a baseball bat and hits it toward the camera.
I don't remember that bit. Was that the special edition?
Yeah, the localization is good on these games, I think, in general. Like, for whatever reason, they, despite it having been a bunch of different teams and, you know, studios, it seems. I don't. Maybe I'm wrong about that, but consistently very well done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fuck, I had something to say about it, but then I got waylaid by my jackass joke. Cool. That was a good aside.
That was a good segment.
Thanks for
what you've been playing, staring Zach? At
me during that. I was gonna ask if you could make Princess Peach puff a fat doobie.
I have not yet found her.
So
I don't know.
Okay. Maybe that is what it turns out gives Bowser his fireballs, is a princess blazing up a fatty inside his glands.
No, he has some sort of fire tube that was blocked by a bug, but I have defeated that bug.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
I played a... I went to this blog that I read every once in a while about... This doesn't count as comments. About roguelikes. And there was some sort of contest among the readers of this blog where they ranked the best roguelikes of 2012 or whatever.
Yeah.
And the game that won best roguelike of 2012, according to whatever this website is, was a game called TOME, which I don't remember what it stands for. It's just some fantasy bullshit. It's like Tales of... And then something with an M and Middle then an Earth. Apostrophe and then an E. No, it was just... And, like, content-wise, it is nothing super special, but I can't say what was good about it, but it was pretty good. And I played it, like, normally when I download a new roguelike that I haven't played, I will play it for 15 minutes and, you know, say, all right, I've figured out whether I like this or not. And if I don't like it, I will stop playing it. And if I do like it, I will stop playing it.
Good.
But this one, I put a couple hours into it. Like, I played a couple of characters, you know, fairly far into it. It's got that thing that I like about Ancient Domains of Mystery, which is another old school roguelike pretty good, where there is like an overworld map, and the way that you're going through these environments, rather than just going down levels in a single dungeon, which I find kind of dissatisfying, there's like a town that you can go to and sell
Omega
your loot.
Omega had that. Did you ever play that one?
No.
That was a good one. The version I played of it, though, had kind of a game-breaking bug where if you acquired enough speed-boosting gear, it allowed you to... It had, like, you'd set your parry and your attack at choice of low, medium, or high, and if you... The more speed you had, the more settings you could pick in that menu.
Uh-huh.
So if you had all of it, you could... parry at every level and also attack at every level, so you could just destroy everything. But sorry, sidetracked you there.
No, it's all right.
Omega, it was a neat game, though. Character generation had you had the option of taking like a personality test to generate your opening stats.
I like games that let you do that.
Yeah. I also like that.
Although, like Ultima 4, that personality test was way too long.
Yeah?
It answered like 60 questions about what you would do if... No.
Oh, yeah, because it had to boil down your answers to a specific virtue or something. Yes.
It was like the Bartle quotient test.
Eight? There's eight attributes, which it asks four questions about, which narrows it down to four, and then it asks two questions about those, which narrows it down to two, and then asks one.
No, it doesn't, because it doesn't. It compares each one to each other
one. No, it doesn't.
It asks totally you eight factorial questions.
It does not.
And they are all about a squire and his page, and yeah, no, I'm serious.
I think there were seven
I'm still finishing character gen. I've yet to get to that town where Glenn Danzig is all the guards. That's the best town.
Yeah.
Ultima 4, man. Richard Garriott rules. Yeah. I don't care what space says. Space is like, get out of here, dummy. Oh,
I had forgotten that on your recommendation, I played some Counterfeit Monkey.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe halfway through.
Man. Still have not gotten
to talking to you about Counterfeit Monkey for a little while today got me double excited about Counterfeit Monkey again, because we had entirely different playthroughs. Like, all of our puzzle solutions were like, I saw how there were 9 different ways to get through this puzzle, and I was like, weird. I saw 0 ways through it. I just cheated.
We're not saying anything. Yeah.
Okay.
There are multiple solutions to every puzzle.
Because I had my hands on my ears.
There are. I don't know if that's true for every puzzle.
There are also a lot of ways in which puzzles can have incidental outcomes that may or may not be important.
But there are a lot of potential incidental outcomes. There is a lot going on. I kind of like flipped out. I got to a section where, I did something and I was like, that seems like that was not a good outcome. And so I went back and did it again. I was like, wow, that's totally different. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, huh. And so I went back and did it again. And it was like a totally different outcome. I was like, what, how many different ways can this thing resolve? And I think there were 6 pretty distinct different things that could happen. And I don't know what is good or bad outcome. Mm. Because some of them.
And this is with exactly the same input on your part?
No. No. This is me doing different stuff.
There are a lot of things.
Operators.
Yeah, there are a lot of operators and there are a lot of operands in the world that you can get.
And you just keep accumulating more and more.
I just discovered, randomly dicking around, I discovered one very, what should have been a very obvious solution to a problem that I had walked away from last time. It was just one of those things where it's like, oh, right, duh. I needed to take a break from this game to solve this. But then Kevin pointed out, oh, right, I like it how when you get an object, you can look at it through the monocle and see if it used to be something else. But if it used to be something else, you can also rub the restoration gel on it and turn it into that thing. And so I just started randomly rubbing restoration gel on stuff that I had picked up. And it's like, oh, okay, now I have 9 or 10 more potential objects to apply to these puzzles. And, man, this is a good
game. Sometimes the monocle also doesn't see through it if it's been.
Right, because it can have been origin pasted.
Yeah, there is so much going on. It's really great. It's really, really great. It's definitely worth your time.
It is a good game.
Yeah.
It's real gamey, right? This was weird. I discovered this thing, I think, from a Metafilter link. Not a comment, though. Maybe 2 weeks ago, there is this blog called Stochastic Planet that somebody started a couple weeks ago. I'll get to that. Where there is a script that randomly selects a point on the Earth, and then if it's too far away from land, it'll pick a new one, or if it is close to it, finds a duplicate, and then it just finds the photograph on Tumblr or Imgur or whatever.
Okay, so that was my question: where did the photographs come from?
But they come from somewhere they come from a big pool of geotagged, publicly available photographs.
That was my question.
What do you call it? What's the thing that Flickr? Maybe. Yeah, Flickr.
Okay.
Anyway, so just every day, it's just some random photograph of somewhere in the world, and it tells you, the corners. And it turns out it's Adam Kadre made that website, who is the guy that made Photopia, that is a game that we talk about a lot on here because it's just fucking great. And did a bunch of other stuff on his, but all of his IF on his website is it divides. There is a field in the database that is story or game, and they're all, it's fuzzy, right? They're all like a little bit of both, or mostly game, or mostly story, right? Photopia is like mostly story. Most of his stuff is mostly story, but this one, whereas I think Emily Short does a lot of stuff that is mostly story.
Yeah.
This is very much mostly game.
That's interesting because, she is definitely pretty much everything I've played of hers has been largely story.
It has.
She has puzzles and stuff, but.
As an exercise of how to design, this was going to be an example of things that you could do with Inform 7 or whatever. And then it just it kind of blew out of control. And then, 2 years later, working on it as a side project, she released it. Hmm. So.
We should figure out a way to pay for this game.
Huh. I mean, I'm sure if you emailed her and said, hey, can I PayPal you some bucks?
That'd be creepy. It's like just randomly emailing somebody and asking if you can buy them a drink. Via PayPal. It's gonna be a bottle of Ramune. or where those horrible Final Fantasy elixirs off of eBay.
Do you know where she lives?
I have no idea.
So, you
so you're suggesting actually going and buying her a drink?
Well, I mean, if we're in the same city,
that's what you do with a lady. You buy her a drink. And then she says, yes, I'll have a Red Bull and vodka. And you say, ugh, and you walk off. Look, don't ever let anybody tell you that I don't know how to treat a lady. I played a game that Emily told me about. I don't want to steal the video game's Taco Thunder, because okay. I'll let her say her piece about this, I guess.
What was
she's,
it called?
She's entitled Antimatière. It's like French for antimatter, okay. I think. It is real raw. Okay. This is like a Basquiat video game. It's in Unity, it's on Kongregate, and it was a student project. And the premise is that they turn on the Large Hadron Collider, and suddenly the world is all fucked up in this particular way where you are the only one who is not stuck on a two-dimensional surface. It is a 3D game where everything is very neatly arranged into a grid, and your way of interacting with the world is to pick up the texture off of any square that you can reach.
Yeah.
And it just swaps out with whatever texture you've got in your hand. So it starts out, you need to get out of this room, and so you got to grab the door and move the door over to the other wall so that you can go through it. And then there is a second level where you're like in a forest, and so you have to, and it's really just one big room, but you can open these passageways that create loops through it that you can then move around so that you can find the bridge, so that you can move the bridge over to the place where you need to get it to get to the power pylon, where you're suddenly having to find ladders to get up this tree, and then you're on a train. And then that's when the more interesting parts of the game occur on the train, the trickier puzzles. It's really rough because there are just a lot of bugs. Like, there are a lot of things where normal progression through the game is just like, oh yeah, sorry, there's a bug that just halts progress there, so you have to like respawn. You have to hold down this button to like restart the level, but it's fine. It'll save your progress.
Interesting.
I did have to read some comments actually while playing that game to figure out what the fuck to do, because that was not listed in the list of instructions.
Oh yeah.
Right.
That reminds me vaguely of the game, the guy that was making Shadow Physics. What is his name?
Benjamin
Steve
Franklin.
Swink, maybe. He was working on a game called Scale or something.
Right. You went to that thing where he showed it at GDC.
Yeah, this was a year ago, and it was basically you have a ray where you can scale out of objects. So like things that are like mountains or whatever, you can like shrink them way down, and then your gun is like has all this like scale capability, and it can like then increase the size of other stuff. And you are navigating the world using that capability by like, I'm going to shrink a tree down and then I'm going to stand on top of it and expand it back up. And so now I'm much higher than I was. There's a tiny mouse hole in this house, and so I make the house really big so I can go through the mouse hole to get inside or whatever, like that kind of thing. But then some really clever stuff like those changing the size of a ball so that it starts rolling down a ramp or whatever, but then like increasing or decreasing the size of the rails so that it like goes faster and like goes over hills. And
oh man,
kind of
it's like playing that game your grandma had where you were trying to. Did your grandma have that game with the two metal rails?
Wasn't it called like Moonshot or something?
Yeah,
like that?
Everybody's grandma had this game. It's so hard.
It's hard. Super hard.
How do you do it? How do you get good at that game?
I had my
entire childhood to get terrible at that game.
Did you ever play that game where you had the like roll the bowling ball over the ramp but not over the second one, because then you lose? Like it is in like arcades or Chuck E. Cheese's or whatever. There'd be like like there's just the tracks are the same width apart, but it's there's a single hump, then a little dip, and then like a second one, and if it goes all the way to the end, it's like, oh, you lose, and it sends it back to the front. But you get tickets if you can get it to last in that, sit in that middle, the local minima, as you might say, mathematically.
Okay.
But then it was really hard because it's tough to give it enough energy to get over that top hump, but not so much that it then goes up over the second one. But
right, it's like throwing a wiffle ball into an angled bushel basket.
Yes.
Wow. How weird is it that all of our grandmas had that moonshoot game? Is that just a thing that they issued you in the 40s? Like,
wasn't much to do. Everybody had one of those and one of those, like, peg-jumping puzzles.
Well, that and the wooden labyrinth thing.
Oh, yeah.
My grandma didn't have one of those.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, mine didn't either, but I knew some people that did.
My grandma had some weird Parker Brothers Civil War tactical war game board game that I want us to look at.
Why did she have that?
I don't know, man.
That's crazy.
My grandmother had a copy of Clue that was so old that the dice had turned into dust.
Wow.
Yeah.
I think I have a copy of Clue that's about that old. My grandma had a copy of Password.
What's that?
I don't know. There was a game show based on it.
Okay.
It's something about Wink Martindale.
Old board games are interesting in the way that they are not very fun.
Did you see that website? I don't know if he's a design guy or a design student, but he did Onopol, which was Monopoly, but with all the theme taken out of it. So it was just very abstract.
Super minimalist.
Colors and circles.
Did you play Make No Wonder?
Uh-uh.
It was a web game where you were on an, I think you did actually.
Did
you were on a randomly generated terrain and it was very Minecrafty. It was like a little 2D Minecraft thing where you'd run around and chop down trees and build stuff.
I don't remember.
It's very similar to that Wayward game that's linked to in the Video Games Hot Dogs forum, Hot Dog forums right now. And it is actually mentioned in that thread. But the guy who made that on Oppo is also the guy who made Make No Wonder. Hmm. And one other project that I had heard of before.
Is it fun?
It's Monopoly.
It's Monopoly. It's even changed the rules.
Yeah. Rules are the same. It's just it's all.
So no. You know,
it's all circles and diagrams instead of hotels.
I have heard that playing Monopoly by the actual rules is way more interesting, but I've also heard people say, nope, you've heard that, but I've heard that that's actually bullshit.
Yeah.
And that game sucks no matter what. And also, did you know that that guy made that game as a way of demonstrating that the rich get richer and everything fucking sucks? Like, the game itself was satire, and that's why it's bullshit, because the world is fucking bullshit, and the only way out is to just put a bullet in your brain. That was the thesis of Monopoly. Huh. You're not supposed to enjoy it. You're supposed to hate it so much that you kill yourself.
So what does it say about Lords of Waterdeep that it's so much fun?
Oh, I don't know.
No bearing on reality whatsoever.
Yeah, that R.A. Salvatore rules. R.A. Salvatore didn't write. Who made
Ed Greenwood.
Is it Forgotten Realms? Is it?
Yeah.
Okay. Ed Greenwood.
Yeah. It was just his D&D campaign that then became might have predated D&D. It might have been his like personal role playing setting. And that he then,
I don't believe that there was any role playing prior to D&D.
I don't think that's
nobody
true.
Ever created a fantasy world like Middle Earth prior to the late 70s. As far as I know, nothing ever happened prior to 1976.
That's true.
Yeah. Well, no, I was born. Nothing happened prior to 1975.
Okay.
I was going to say 77, but whatever you guys want to say.
Interestingly, there were no women born prior to 1986, as far as I'm concerned.
Huh.
No, I meant 1990.
I don't even know.
What's now minus 15? 1998. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah.
That's the new running gag, apparently.
Is that you're 15?
Is that I like 15-year-old girls. No, yes, that I am 15. Explains a lot.
And also a girl.
I found this Zoltan machine. I keep expecting to change back. But no, it turns out I'm just dying a lot earlier. Thanks, Zoltan.
Kevin, how far have you got on your Nemesis cube?
I left it here. So I've not played it at all.
I'm stuck on 22.
You got one?
Yeah.
I was around 20, 22 I got there.
I'm trying not to use the hints.
Yeah, I don't want to either.
Yeah.
I accidentally hit.
I didn't realize you had left yours here, or I would have. Yeah, I would have totes played it.
I'm sorry, you could have just used mine. There's four save slots.
Yeah, I like having it sitting there on my desk next to my monitor, so that when something is
next to your monitor,
monitors. So when something is loading, or if I'm waiting on something, then I can pick it up.
Yeah, the first 20 are pretty simple, but then I think it might ramp up real hard after
22
that.
I had to start making notes, and even with my notes I'm not sure what's going on.
There was at least one level where I was able to beat it, but I don't know why.
Huh.
Or I was able to write down enough stuff that let me beat the level, but I don't understand what was happening.
Nemesis Factor.
Yeah.
It's what we've been playing. What's in the news, Gabby? I mean, Murmur? I mean, Fiancé Zhen? Wait, I'm sorry, Kevin. I just confused you for three of our Kickstarter backers.
Oh, yeah? I thought this section was going to be called The World According to Garp, who is also one of our Kickstarter backers.
Hmm. And Aladdin Sane, who is also one of our Kickstarter backers, and also, I think, David Bowie.
Oh, yeah? That's great.
Hmm. You know who else was played by Robin Williams? JJ of the Ike Lukers and Perkika. No, wait. Those weren't characters played by Robin Williams. Those were Kickstarter backers.
Played by Code Ranger and Tim Super Awesome Sauce Hurd.
I kind of want to play this Kickstarter backer's name as a game.
Wait. Tim Hurd is not Super Awesome Sauce. Tim Hurd is The World is Square, only backwards and divided into four letters at a time.
Arkanoid?
That might be a different Tim. Fuck.
That's
what's in the news?
Yeah, Arkanoid.
Somebody bought the Arkanoid IP from THQ.
Yes.
And changed their name to it.
But it's spelled...
Man, do you think that's what this is about? Do you think that Koch Media just really, really wanted to change their name to
Volition?
To Volition.
When I first saw that, I thought, Voltron? I didn't know they had the Voltron IP.
Liz, I feel like I saw exactly that joke posted to Twitter by somebody today.
Yeah?
Yeah, the word Volition really does look like the word Voltron.
Yeah.
Really, everything that starts... Like, whenever I see something about Voltaire, I think, ooh, Voltron. Oh, wait. This is just something boring.
So THQ is officially, like, burned. For real gone under. They had, apparently today, they had a auction to get rid of their various IP licenses and stuff. And so Sony bought Relic, Koch Media got Volition and Metro.
Koch Media.
And that's, I guess, not the... Koch Brothers. This is a European.
Yeah, I don't actually know who some of these people are. Crytek got Homefront. Take Two got Evolve, which I guess they outbid the game's actual developer.
Whoa.
Which is like a little mean, I guess. But
developers ain't got no money.
Ubisoft bought THQ Montreal and South Park: The Stick of Truth.
There's apparently some legal stuff about
with
that.
South Park.
Yeah, the South Park media company or whatever is, I think, suing over whether or not they can do that.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Interesting. They still have a handful of other IPs that just weren't, either nobody bid on them or they weren't part of the auction, so that was still part of the Chapter 11 filing, mm-hmm. And then they also, like, all of their publishing business and stuff.
Were you able to find anything about what happened to Double Fine's properties?
Seems like they're just part of the Chapter 11 stuff that nobody's stepped forward and grabbed them.
I hope the South Park game comes out and that it is good and that it is popular and that it's not another case where everybody on the internet is being mean about something. Of course, I won't know because I won't read that shit.
But isn't it, wouldn't people talking about it, even if they were negative, be good? Because
any publicity is good publicity. Yeah. Ask Charles Manson.
Sure. We all know his name.
His life is probably better than it would have been if he hadn't arranged for all those people to be murdered.
All his meals are taken care of.
Yeah. He gets to paint stuff. People listen to him. People interview him.
Yeah.
Nobody ever interviewed me. I guess that's not really true. Not about murdering people. Nothing about anything interesting.
Yeah,
that's what I'm saying.
You were interviewed once about someone else murdering someone.
Oh, yeah.
I
forgot about that. I yelled at that guy.
You know, you might think that your life is better given that no one has been questioning you about all of your murders.
It's true. Nobody can see the swastika that's tattooed on my forehead because it's only in UV ink.
Okay, that was a cool puzzle from the Mystery Hunt, actually.
Well, somebody had a swastika tattooed on every participant. Whoa!
Yeah, I know, right? Like, we turn on the black light and everybody's face is going, like, holy shit, how did they do that? Yeah. I was in Chicago. I don't know. Like, they must have come in. They must have, like, while you were sleeping the night before. there was a...
Or maybe it was just a breeding program in the 70s in anticipation of this particular mystery hunt.
So it was
They gave you the UV swastika forehead gene.
It was a metapuzzle. There were three subparts to it where you got answers that were acetic acid, fold in, and add in tech. The MIT school newspaper is the tech. And so if you looked at the issue that came out right before the mystery hunt, there was a 2012 beef in review, which was just this fake ad about some sort of report that had all of these like funny article names in it. So they gave you a shredded crossword which had already been filled out. And if you glued it back together or like taped it back together and then put some acetic acid on it, you would like this invisible ink would show up over on a bunch of squares.
And people just had acetic acid laying around?
That's vinegar. I mean...
Okay. Dude, I don't know. Okay. Why didn't you say vinegar?
Because the clue's answer was acetic acid. So then you...
Can you make aspirin out of vinegar?
No. That's
You get some salicide. Use some vinegar and some salad on the side. That makes aspirin.
Then you would find all the words that were in common between the ad and the tech and the crossword, and then you would fold it in. And anything that was highlighted with the invisible ink and also from the tech would made a phrase that was the solution to the puzzle. That was neat. Like that was like a physical components puzzle that...
Not as cool as that skull.
No. Nothing has ever been quite as cool as the mystery hunt that was based on the Time Bandits, because that was fucking amazing. So good.
They gave everybody a plaster skull.
At the beginning, yeah. There was a shopping cart full of plaster skulls that they had made for the, 40 or 50 teams that were competing, and they told you to be careful because you'd need it later, and there were like all these weird sort of runes and stuff sort of inscribed on the outside of it, and turns out at the very late stage of the hunt, you're supposed to throw it at a wall and it would break open and there would be a map inside. And so, like, you had this map.
The runes on the outside meaningless?
They were completely meaningless. Nice. But they looked like there was things that looked like there were places on MIT. Like, it was really clever because it was like, oh, man, like, maybe this is the right size to do something.
I mean, I'd be really good at making fake puzzles that didn't actually indicate anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so, like, I got to keep our team's skull because we didn't get to the runaround where you had to do that.
It's in there on top of your speaker.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite, like, objects.
Unlike other of your favorite objects, you haven't knocked it off of your desk and broken it into a million pieces.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kevin made a bunch of dishes in glass blowing class and then broke a bunch of them.
Yeah. I have a couple left.
It's good. I'm going to drink some whiskey out of them and throw them at the fireplace.
Those are the ones that I have left are the ones that were technically worse because they were the thicker walls, but they're really fucking hard to break.
They're the ones that survived me bashing that plaster skull against them while you were gone. What else is in the news?
Oh, yeah, news. Let's see here. Jay Wilson is stepping down as the director of Diablo 3. So, it's interesting. His letter of like sort of... moving on to other projects in Blizzard, which he didn't specify, so I wonder if it's Titan or something else.
I hope to fuck they announce
what that is
this year.
Yeah, I mean...
I'm hyped.
I'm kind of excited, right? But they're like, I think they don't want people to spend years speculating on stuff.
Well, they often work on things for years and then just shit-can them if they don't work.
That's also true. That's also true. But he talked about how... like, Blizzard has this policy of releasing things when they're done or when they're ready, and there's been a lot of criticism levied against Diablo 3 that it wasn't when they put it out. And he's like, we definitely recognize that there were things that weren't as good as as they should have been, and we've made a bunch of adjustments and changes and that kind of thing. And, he sort of apologized for the way that, like, he'd been interacting with the community, because I think he felt like there was a bunch of people who felt like he wasn't listening to them or was angry or whatever. And, it was very contrite. And I hope that he does not have a bad taste in his mouth after having
and that, somebody dealt posted, that with a posted to Facebook. Fuck that loser.
I liked the work that he has done on this game. I think the direction of it was very good. And while I'm not playing it, and I did not play it as much as I played Diablo 2, I think it was still a really fun, good game. And of the games that I have paid full price for in the past year or two,
I don't
regret that at all.
I got my money's worth out of it.
Yeah. What else? Obama has asked Congress to provide funding for violent video game research.
Not just video games, though. It's media in general, isn't
he,
it?
He specifically... Well, okay, that's true. But like, but video games were definitely among the the things that he wants.
If only there was already an existing body of peer-reviewed research about this kind of stuff that you could consult.
There's no harm in doing more research, right? That's what that's science is all about, testing the same hypothesis multiple times.
Yeah.
Right? So
and
do it.
Government is all about distracting people along whatever the current axis du jour of distraction is.
Sure.
So fucking whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, he can't do anything about guns, so he's just doing something.
Pretty much.
Who knows? I think more attention paid to video games is good, right? Because so out of this research could come notions of like how people interact with various tropes, and maybe that's
no such thing as bad publicity.
No such thing as bad science.
Yeah, I just don't think this that's is actually not true. But this is a meaningful axis on which anything good can happen to video games.
Oh, but more scientists getting money and their job being to play video games. That's good.
You know what I want them doing? Curing cancer before we get it.
I don't think that, you know.
Life extension pills.
I don't want to live forever, I don't think.
Yeah, but I mean, you don't want cancer like next week. No. You had cancer next week, wouldn't you be like, oh, okay, I'll take a cure if they had one?
I don't know.
What if they had a pill that would give you double boners? There's all kinds of good stuff that scientists could do. Well, you've got two boners.
At the same time?
Yeah.
I think it would... otherwise, it wouldn't really be meaningful, Riff. I mean, come on. There's a bunch of...
Yeah, I mean, I've already got a pill that can give you two boners at different times. That's just a normal day.
How is a normal day a pill?
It's an aspirin.
Oh, okay. Did you make it out of vinegar?
I did. I put vinegar and some salad on the side, and then I had an aspirin.
Double boner.
Yep, double boner.
not Bethesda.
Beta.
The beta signups for
Elder Scrolls Online.
Online have started. Although I don't know, like they might. For all I know, it might be a year before they actually start letting people play.
Maybe you'll be a character in it.
Yeah. Oh man, a video games hot dog listener made a companion based on me and posted it in our forums.
Skyrim,
it's pretty funny.
So yeah. Good.
Yeah,
I like that was a thing that happened. There was a video that they posted.
Yeah,
and what is it? I need you to come with me. I need you to
fuck.
How does it feel like an open a mailbox?
What you thinking? How does a pelican open a mail? I don't even remember saying that. And some of it was from Advice Hot Dog. Like they're pulling from everything.
There are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of hours of your.
If I ever get that Roger Ebert box, it is going to be a fucking. I'm going to be a weird fucking dude to hang out with. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, so that's what I got for news.
Good. So this assignment. Thomas was alone.
Yep.
Was it good? I totally forgot.
Riff.
I'm sorry. I had
you only get so many strikes here. And
I had a brand new video card and Fallout 3 and third monitor and I was doing a lot of work.
This was a short game.
I was working.
This
I was
is
working
like
on
4 hours
Kingdom.
to from beginning to end, total completion.
Was it really only 4 hours?
Pretty short. It's pretty short.
I only played like a third of the way through it. I don't like this game.
Really?
Yeah. Go ahead. I want your counterpoint before I
my point.
Yeah.
So it is a game that is narrated. You ostensibly like there are sort of a framework of little quotations from people talking about artificial intelligences, and so the idea is that you are inside a computer and you're like a little artificial intelligence sort of navigating this abstract computer space.
But that like you become aware, like
you, yeah,
it starts with, it starts with Thomas becoming aware
that he, yeah. And so you are a little rectangle and it's just a sort of puzzle platforming game. You have a particular way that you jump and then you encounter other rectangles which are different shapes and sizes and have different ways of jumping or sort of interacting with their environments. And through, you can like jump basically by jumping on other rectangles, you navigate these environments and open and close doors and stuff like that. It's just, you know, it is nothing particularly novel in the way that it approaches it, but it's pretty neat the way the different sort of the division of all the like different styles of jumping. Like one of the rectangles has double jump, yeah, right? And that's like, that means that they can get much further or whatever.
One of them can float in water and is big, so she can become a boat for the other ones to go across.
Yeah,
they all have personalities that are well developed. It is weird to me. People say of this game, it is amazing how much personality these things have, even though they're just featureless rectangles. But like, nobody would say that about a book. Right? It is amazing how much personality these characters have, even though there is no visual representation of them at all. Right? It, normally, in a thing that was primarily written or conveyed in language, you don't, like, say how remarkable it is that the characters have identities. Right? And it just, like, I get why somebody would say that. I don't get why they would write it down or say it again.
Here's right? the thing, right? Like, you could have, this could have been a game with no narrative whatsoever, right? And the fact that they named all of the rectangles and then gave them personalities and then sort of told you about their, like, interpersonal, sort of off-camera interactions or whatever was charming.
Yeah, it's cute.
Yeah. And it does give you a sort of a little bit of a sense of, like, I felt bad when I would kill one of them by accident. Well, or
right, because they write about these characters and then they've been characterized.
Yeah.
You know, it, like, the reason that this game makes characters that you can relate to is because it writes them.
Right.
Right? You know, like, the thing that made me just stop playing the game is the fifth or sixth level in a row where what the game said was basically, all right, here's this obstacle that you need to overcome via some sequence of movements, mm-hmm, with these three or four different characters that you're controlling. Now do that five more times. Like, there's a ledge that you have to get up that involves you, like, jumping each of the guys on top of each other. Like, in the third level, when you've just got three guys, and they basically, uh-huh, have different jump heights and different heights.
Right.
And there's a ledge that you have to get the tall guy, and then move the medium guy next to the tall guy, jump the short guy onto the medium guy, onto the tall guy, jump the medium guy next to the short guy on the tall guy, jump the short guy onto the medium guy, and then onto the next ledge. And then you have to do that six or seven more times.
I never felt like it was that bad. I mean, there was definitely, like, you have to do this three times in a row. That kind of thing happened regularly, but
like,
I don't remember it ever being quite that bad.
Twice is too many. Like,
really?
Do
you really think that, like, every puzzle should only be presented once and never repeated?
I don't
repeated?
Think that it adds anything to make you perform the same sequence of actions multiple times in a row. Like, this is what everyone should have learned from Braid.
Huh.
Like, and it's so fucking weird to me that
there
that
are
is
multiple
not what people
ways
got
to,
out of Braid.
There are multiple ways to solve some of these problems, though, and so if you're only ever presented with one obstacle, you only ever see one solution to it, you know?
But if you are presented with an obstacle that you then solve, and then you see the same obstacle two more times, you are not prompted to do it in two different ways. You are not being offered the idea that there are two different solutions to it. You're just going to be like, damn it.
With Counterfeit Monkey, I was encountering multiple... Before I found the particular lock, I would encounter multiple keys that seemed like they would fit the same kind of lock. And I started to recognize... I started to recognize where there were going to be multiple solutions to things. And I didn't feel like only because there was only ever one lock for them, I was like kind of a little sad, right? Because it's like I didn't get to try out these multiple options.
You could always play it again.
Sure. Yeah, but I mean, when you have math homework, they don't just do, okay, add 5 plus 5. Okay, now you know math. Now you know addition.
No, but what they don't do is say add 5 plus 5. Problem number 2, add 5 plus 5. Problem number 3, add 5 plus 5.
But it
they explicitly don't do that because that is a useless bullshit waste of your time.
But it is not, you're not maneuvering exactly the same way each time, right? Because you can fall off of the things. Like it's because it's, you are having to maneuver through a world.
They are not sufficiently different to justify their existence, in my mind. Hmm. They're just staircases. They even make a joke about it. Boy, there sure are a lot of staircases in this bullshit repetitive world.
Wow. Did it actually say bullshit repetitive? That's what the narrator
says. No, that was maybe me projecting a little bit, but
I didn't find it. I didn't have that same objection. I definitely, like, by, there are, I think there are 9 different areas with 10 levels each. And somewhere around the 8th or 9th level, I was like, well, I wonder how long this thing, 8th or 9th area, I was like, how long is this thing? And I went and I looked. And I was like, oh, okay, so I'm near the end. But I definitely was getting kind of tired of some of it. They introduced some totally new mechanics by the last level or two, last area or two, which was, I mean, I think it's probably worth seeing them too. But
so if I had been more charmed by the window dressing on it, right? It was, you know, twee in a way that was just very indie game. Uh-huh. You know, and that's fine, but it wasn't novel enough to keep me interested, like, in this particular case, right? Like, I feel like these criticisms are kind of unfair, and I don't know why I feel that way.
The level design was adequate, but not like amazing.
I wish we had a third perspective. I wish there was a third guy that had played this game that could, you know, maybe
chime in.
Yeah, just
I appreciated
have this not just be a game of tennis. You know?
Having to find all the like hidden little pixel things on each level. Not each level, but on many of the levels.
I liked how there was an achievement for each of them.
Yeah. It's pretty funny. I guess. Yeah. I liked the feeling of the game, and I enjoy a puzzle, you know, a puzzle platformer. That is a fun genre in my head. But if that's not enough to carry you through, then it's not gonna, I don't think it's gonna be satisfying. It was neat because there were levels where you were controlling like 6 or 7 different rectangles, and having to figure out how they were gonna interact was interesting.
I was also reminded of a handicap that I have.
Where you can't see rectangles?
No, where I only ever rotate the controls in one direction. I was never able to internalize switching back. So like when I play Tetris, I only ever rotate the pieces
to the
clockwise.
Okay.
And I was still pretty good at Tetris.
Right, but this sometimes you have to cycle through 6 or 7 other rectangles to get to the one you want.
Yeah, and once you get them out of order, like it's not, they're right. Cycling through by color, and I get that there's that little legend down in the corner of the screen, but I'm not looking at that. Like, that's not.
Yeah, plus they're all, it's color, so how can you tell?
Sure. Yeah. I don't know, man. Maybe I should give it another chance.
Probably not. I'm not gonna tell you that it's like it fundamentally changes at any.
There's not. It's not a revelation at the end. It doesn't teach you how to love and laugh and live. And
no,
it doesn't turn out you weren't actually murdering all those people.
No. Yeah. But you know, that can't. Every assignment can't be awesome for everybody.
All right. So next assignment.
Yeah.
Yeah. Miasmata.
We're gonna play Miasmata. Yeah.
This is a Windows only game. Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun. It's on Steam for what, like 15, 20 bucks?
15 bucks on Steam.
I've already played like half hour of it.
And it is a first-person exploring cartography botany game.
Survival game.
Survival, yeah.
Apparently you're hunted by something.
Walking around is kind of gross, so you got to be ready for that.
Gross?
They were talking about was it on Idle Thumbs or it might have been Giant Bomb, about how part of it is that we're used to, in video games, walking up a slope much faster than we actually should be able to. Right,
because you're covering the same like distance on the horizontal plane.
Yeah.
But this is where it is not just that, right? You're not just you stumble and stagger and fall and slide a lot.
Because your character is sick, right?
Well, just because your character is a person, right? Like it is just
stumble and stagger and
you would fall if you were consistently just abruptly reversing direction on 45-degree inclines like you do in a video game, right? Like it takes some getting used to, and if
interesting,
yeah, it requires some tolerance of the immersive elements of this simulation that are very not what you're used to in a video game, because you are not some kind of amazing badass in this game. Like you are a guy scientist. Who both the environment and your own body is trying to kill you.
And your lack of pockets.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You carry a couple things, I think. And then you go to this shack where you chop them up and then use a microscope. You make medicine.
Cool.
Try to solve your gonna die problems. Make double boner pills. You just got to find a vinegar plant, which I think they call
pitcher
grapes,
plants.
And salad plant, salad which tree. Is really just anything. Yeah. Okay. Do you guys want to do some listeners mail?
Yes. Sure.
All right. Let's just make this episode long as fuck.
Yeah, I was going to say, it seems like a long one, but we should do some.
Ashton writes, Arkham Horror versus Descent versus Mage Knight versus Super Dungeon Explorer versus whatever else fits in this genre.
The only one of those that I know at all is Mage Knight. Mage Knight is really good. I've tried to play Arkham Horror. It's baffling and complicated.
Arkham Horror has the weird like AI built into the way that the board and the monsters operate. All the monsters are either black or white, and every board space has like a black path leading away from it and a white path leading away from it. And on alternate turns, either all of the white monsters move along the white paths or all of the black monsters move along the black paths. So it creates some weird mob pathing, but not so you'd notice.
Arkham Horror is a board game that ought to be an iPad game.
Yeah, although this comes up later. I know you've said you enjoy playing Mansions of Madness from time. I mean, we kind of enjoyed it once.
Yeah, we played it once. You might be thinking of Betrayal at House on the Hill, which played a ton of.
Yeah, play a lot of Betrayal at House on the Hill. That is Arkham Horror light.
Yeah.
It is.
Mansions was really good, but it was
different than. So Arkham Horror takes like half an hour to set up, or an hour, or 6 days, or however long.
Right.
Because there's a lot going on. I guess I've only ever played it with an expansion, and it was just a ton of setup.
Didn't we play it at like Gen Con?
Yeah, or something. I think Josh brought it.
But I think we were playing it wrong. Like, there were some rules that were being...
We played with some house rules.
Yeah. That just made it so you were a total badass, and you were just like, yeah, fuck yeah, I'm going to shotgun a Shoggoth.
But...
Whereas, like, this is a game where if you ever encounter a monster, you're going to die. Like you would.
Betrayal at House on the Hill is great because the setup is almost zero, and you are constructing the board over the first half of the game, which is, like... Why is that a thing that isn't more common?
They need to put out an expansion with some more scenarios. I think we've played
near all of the scenarios in that.
There are 50 in there, and there's no way we have played. No.
They need to reissue the game where it's not made out of moist garbage, so that
the second printing or whatever was garbage.
The second printing bad.
Yeah, everything printed on cardboard that just was like you open it and it's all just warped and nothing will sit.
That's how the Space Hulk reprint was. That was really disappointing.
It was super cheap. I got several copies of it. Wee. Yeah.
Night Vole wrote, Kevin, it has been remarked that you have a special condition wherein you must play a game to 100% completion once you've begun. What games have you enjoyed yet chosen not to fully complete? Exclude ones discarded due to time constraints. What activities in an otherwise enjoyable game do you find so tedious that you refuse to complete them? How would you personally address these issues without fundamentally revamping the structure of the activity?
That's a really good question. I don't think I could speak to all of it without thinking about it a little bit more than I have.
I'm sorry I didn't let you read it during our previous podcast trying to.
I feel like almost every game that I have started but not finished is one where I feel like I want to come back to it. Like I'm halfway through Deus Ex right now, and I'm halfway through Skyrim, or a third of the way through Skyrim or something.
Well, you can never really get done with Skyrim.
You can, right?
There's not like a meter. Of course, there wasn't a meter on World of Warcraft, and you did every quest.
Yeah, I did. World of Warcraft, I had completed every horde quest that was possible for me to complete, and I was really sad that there was like all the Encourage opening stuff.
Oh, you know, one thing that is too lame for you to actually tolerate in a video game? Playing Alliance.
Sure. There have been some games that I have just felt really frustrated by and stopped playing, but I can't think of anything that's jumps out at me. I'd have to give this some more thought. There have been Flash games that I have played that were so obviously dumb that I just put them down. It's not that I have to play everything. It's like when I feel like there is some, when I feel like somebody has put some thought and consideration and care into crafting an experience, I want to sort of have experienced the entirety of their sort of story or their process or whatever it is that like is compelling me. And I don't like leaving things unfinished. I like getting 100% completion on things when that's possible.
You might not like this antimatter game. There are either there are alternate solutions that no one on Congregate has found,
mm-hmm.
or the game is more unfinished than it seems like it is, because there is like an entire room where the walls are very much a puzzle, but the one piece that you need to start the puzzle is in just an inaccessible portion of the room. And the way that you actually finish the level is by just jumping into a hole that's in between you and the thing that you need to get the puzzle started. And I don't know if that's just a thing that they ran out of time.
Weird.
And didn't implement. And then in the very last level, there is an alternate exit that you can almost but not quite reach by messing around with the environment. And then there is the actual ending of the game that sends you to the credits, which is trivial to reach.
Interesting.
Yeah, and I wasted a bunch of time. Well, I spent a bunch of time that turns out
was a waste.
To have been wasted.
Right.
And then afterwards, I was like, well, I wonder if anybody else figured out how to do that, but it was just a bunch of people saying, oh, I wasted a bunch of time and got real close, but couldn't figure out how to
interesting
get to the other exit.
That's kind of an interesting statement in and of itself, though.
Yeah, do you think that's a valid statement? This is a combination brilliant cutting piece of art and total dick move.
Maybe. I could see that. The idea of this sort of alluring object or gate that you can almost get to but not quite, like that is an experience that you had, and the problem being not knowing whether that was intentional.
So do you feel like a modern Tantalus?
Maybe, but that's so. Like, here's the problem, right?
Wait, the modern Tantalus is still Tantalus. He's still there.
If it was, if it was intentional, then it's interesting and clever. And if it was an accident, then fuck them, right? Like, and that's pretty disparate opinion on my part, right? Like,
they're French. They probably did it on purpose.
Well, then you
maybe
you
it checks. Maybe it checks your IP address to see where you are, and if you're from America, like, it gives you this like, let us watch this guy waste his time. Put it up there. He wasn't. He can get there. I got German at the end. I don't know. Riff, says Nightfall, you have in the past lamented the fact that there are many games you would like to play but do not exist. Let's say you're given a job at Nintendo as the head of one Nintendo IP of your choice and given free rein with the design of the next game. What franchise would you choose and what sorts of fundamental design changes would you implement?
Well, I would go with Metroid. I feel like the Super Metroid and the first Metroid Prime game were kind of perfect Metroid games, but they've kind of lost sight of what I think makes Metroid good, which is the free exploration and loneliness.
Starting when?
Definitely Mother M, Other M, was not good at all.
But that wasn't first party. I mean, that was...
Well, no, but it's still part of the IP. It's part of the series. And Metroid Fusion was lost sight of a lot of that as well. Metroid Fusion was kind of a proto Other M. What I would like to add to it, actually, is I would be really interested in a very sort of quiet and lonely free exploration. I mean, you know, with the gates that Metroid typically has, but free exploration, and as far as any Metroid game is free exploration. But with more of an archaeological sort of angle, like...
Indiana Jones?
Well, finding out more detail about the Chozo civilization and doing it with sort of research and translation puzzles and logical puzzles in the vein of Fez. Like a Metroid game with.
So you want to make a Metroid game that no one would like?
Well, I'd like it. Well, isn't okay. that the point?
I
of
guess
this
that's
question?
The question. Yeah.
That's but yeah, the like the puzzles that you get in Fez once you've gotten all the stuff that's just jumping puzzles and have moved into the stuff that's information puzzles. I'd like to see a Metroid game with a bunch of that. I think that'd be fascinating.
Then he asks all of us, I know you guys like Arkham Horror, but dealing with the actual mechanics of setting up and playing a full game are cumbersome. Were you aware that there's an iPhone app for Arkham Horror now that does away with more than half the decks of cards, manages your tokens for you, and vastly
nice.
Enhances setup and cleanup time? Yeah, everyone has to have it.
Yeah.
Who's playing? But, I mean, who do we know that doesn't have an iPhone and waste money on games?
That's kind of neat, actually.
Does one of us have a copy of Arkham Horror?
I think so.
I don't know.
I think I remember seeing one somewhere. Yeah. Does anybody have a phone?
I think I saw
can we
one
call,
somewhere.
Can we call someone who has a copy of it?
WVO Quine writes, what categories do you use to sort your games on Steam? I had no idea there were categories on Steam.
Yeah, I don't.
I use the list of everything, and then I scroll
yep.
to it alphabetically, and I can never remember if the is stripped out of games or not, and so I always have to scroll twice.
I almost recently started to try and figure out if I could categorize them into Windows only and Mac, but
yeah.
I did not.
There's already a Mac and a Windows-only filter.
Is there? Okay.
Yeah, there's games for this system only. Well, okay. There's games for this system and Mac games.
I'll have to look into that because I think I started to look at that and then got distracted by something.
And he also writes, who did you romance in the Mass Effect games? In Mass Effect 1, I gave up as soon as the galaxy map became available to me because I was so confused about everything in that game. In Mass Effect 2, I romanced that girl that you can't fuck, but then you get to watch her die.
Well, that seems super satisfying.
Yeah, it was great. I was like, oh, nice. Good job. Good job, Zach. You know, sure know how to pick them. I think that was Yeoman Chalmers.
Was she the redhead?
The one who tells you when you have mail.
Okay.
And then in the third one, I think I accidentally made it so right before the final battle, I made out with that Asari girl with my helmet still on. my full face helmet still on.
I only played the second one, and I didn't finish it, but I think most of my flirting time was spent flirting with Jack.
Mm.
Because I thought she was interesting in a way that a lot of the other female characters weren't.
You know, it's weird. I just on a personal level, I can often get behind a sort of a punk rock visualist aesthetic in a lady, but that was too far.
Getting behind?
That was
I mean, I definitely
Much. It was like really grotesque.
Yeah,
like,
I would. Jack is not a character that, if she existed in real life, that I in real life would go anywhere near, because I'm sure she would break me in half. But as a character for my video game character to to be interested in.
Who do you think Kickstarter backer Nick Romantic would want to romance in Mass Effect?
I don't know, one of those big elephant dudes that speaks aloud all of the emotional intonation.
The doctor guy, the doctor assassin thing. What was his name? He was really weird and talked fast.
The scale face, and he had weird eyes.
Yeah, I think so.
Are you talking about Morden Solis?
Yes.
Okay, he wasn't really an assassin, was he?
Wasn't he?
I think he was just like a weird Nazi scientist.
Okay.
Sort of like...
someone who studies Nazis.
He's a cool guy and fucking goes out like a bitch in Mass Effect 3, and that made me really sad. I mean, you know, heroically, well, like a bitch who heroically sacrifices himself to save you, but in a really contrived...
Definitely he does, or he did in
think that there's any way to play that game where he doesn't die.
No. Okay.
So it's not a spoiler, because it's inevitable. We all die in the end. So
I was thinking about video games where you are clearly expected to like have some sort of outcome, but if you are extremely lucky or really good, you can avoid them. It's like where your brother survives in Deus Ex,
yeah,
or BattleTech Crescent Hawk Inception. You're like competing in an arena, and you like these mechs break in and try to kill you. But if you are exceptionally good at maneuvering around, you can survive that fight with a mech intact, which means you start the game with a mech, which just changes the whole way that game plays out. Because normally you're sort of wandering around in the wilderness just on foot and having to avoid a bunch of stuff for a long time. And I wonder, do game designers leave those loopholes in on purpose, or do they? I mean, like with Deus Ex, they clearly did because
right, they wrote a bunch of dialogue for that guy later in the game. Like, whoops.
But in other games, like I feel like maybe there are situations where you like, and like those kinds of emergent things are really neat, I think, when you do something that is hard and you don't actually expect it to work out, but then suddenly like you've opened up this whole different possibility space and possibility tree.
Like when the game develops its own consciousness and lets you fuck people that they didn't actually write fucking scenes with. Yeah.
But I mean, maybe you can get to that door some way, right? And then what happens? Who knows? Dun, dun, dun.
God, I fucking hate romance in video games. The goddamn Star Wars debacle.
Oh, let's not even talk about that.
Man, I also play. Oh man, I forgot another game that I played. It was a
Star
Link
Wars
to
debacle. From,
yeah, Star Wars.
The debacle.
Homosexuality debacle. .com. No, it was a game that was linked to from Metafilter called Reset. It is this crazy. It is a game that is entirely contained in a single HTML document. All the text from the game, as view source, is just in some JavaScript code. It's written in Twine, which is just this like hypertext choose your own adventure engine that's got a pretty robust scripting language. I was looking at it, like it's like, oh, this is like, we made a thing like this, only this is already encapsulated and just packages these HTML documents. But it's called Reset, and it is a sort of I don't know, it's like it's like a kind of a dystopian like transhumanist vibe where you are a person with like malfunctioning terminal hardware installed in your brain. And so you are sort of recovering from an injury that screwed you up and made it so they had to replace all of the wiring inside of you, which made it so you lost most of the memories that you'd acquired since you got that installed, because it wasn't in your wet memory. Like you were still you, but yeah, no, it's, and then it's got some like weird like sort of BDSM overtones to it. It's pretty good.
Huh.
It is just look up Reset, and that will not work.
Probably Reset
no,
Twine.
There is no fucking way that search would work.
I know I should just be able to do Reset Game
Yeah, just search. Yeah, just wait. Find the button. Find the button on your computer that says reset, and then you'll be able to play it.
Cool. Wow, it's got a dedicated button for it
on everybody's computer. Yeah, before even computers in the 80s had this. Actually, they didn't.
Forward looking.
They didn't have reset buttons in the 80s. Maybe they did.
Took them forever to install those any keys they kept referencing.
This portion of the show brought to you by Kevin's grandmother.
Where's the any key?
Kevin, if one of our listeners wanted to email your grandmother to get a lulzy joke about the any key, how would they play do that?
Are we done with our? Are we done with our listeners?
Oh, now? I think we are. Yeah.
Okay.
I read it all of it all.
Okay. All right. Well, so if people wanted to send us some more listeners' mail, they could tweet at us at VGHotDog. They could email us VGHotDog@gmail.com. Or they could check out our forums, accessible via link at videogameshotdog.com. And we are sorry in advance for all the bullshit you have to go through to make a forum account.
Yeah. The internet is fucking terrible. If you have a high traffic forum that uses standard forum software, you get hundreds of spam bots per hour signing up for your forums.
Trying to. Mm-hmm.
And so we have to have this fucking garbage where you have to sign up for an account like an email somebody to request that your account get activated and demonstrate that you're a real... And it's just fucking terrible. I mean, we're just keeping people out because I wouldn't do that. I would not care how good a podcast was. I would not go through that shit to set up a fucking forum account. And the only difference between Video Games Hot Dogs forum and the other forums for other podcasts is that because ours are associated with our video game and have like a huge user base and are really highly trafficked, we're somehow on this list of targets for fucking spam bots, and it's really obnoxious and it makes me hate everyone and everything.
I mean, it would screw everybody's internet bookmarks, but I wonder what would happen if we just moved them to a different place, a different forum.
I think it would only take a couple of minutes before
the bots.
So what was preventing those bots from signing up before was an incredibly annoying and tedious set of questions that you had to answer, where you had to like go list all the classes from Kingdom of Loathing in alphabetical order, separated by commas.
Spelling counts, capitalization counts.
Yep.
Yep.
And so that worked, I guess. It is amazing to me that anyone ever used our forums while those were in place, but there weren't any bots and there wasn't any just like random shit covered vagina. But that happened a lot in the early days of our forums. It would come back and every post was just like, oh, look, I've edited in a bunch of photographs of shit-covered vaginas.
Huh.
It's pretty good. Anyway, videogameshotdog.com if you want some of that. All right. I've had fun recording an episode of Video Games Hot Dog with you guys. Yeah, episode 87.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know about that riff. It's been a long one.
That's what I said.
Good night, everybody.
Have a great week, everybody. Good night.
I hate her because she was in Fried Green Tomatoes.
I don't like her because she's kind of mean.
So we could... She keeps breaking James Caan's legs over and over. How does this... Maybe I just left the DVD on repeat.
Yeah, I keep watching it on repeat.
I left the DVD on repeat, and I keep fucking up and mistaking my television for a window. God, I've been taking a lot of PCP.